This is the Digital Savage Experience Podcast, hosted by Roman Prokopchuk, bringing you all things digital marketing, tech, business, and motivation. What's stopping you from becoming relentless in all aspects of life? Are you ready to become a digital savage? Let's get into today's episode.
Hey everyone, this is Roman Prokopchuk, and this is the Digital Savage Experience Podcast. Today I have with me Nick Morrison. He's an Amazon best-selling author, professional musician, composer, teacher, voice actor, YouTube creator that's from Calgary, Alberta. Thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
My pleasure. Thanks for jumping on. So tell me a little bit about your journey. How did you get to where you are today and acquire all those many hats you wear?
Well, I'm really lucky. I came from a musical family. My grandmother, before she had kids, was a aspiring or soon to be fully professional pianist, concert pianist. And my grandfather worked many jobs. And one of the side hustles, they didn't call it a side hustle back then, but he had a wedding band that he played in, and he played drums. And so there was always music in that household with my aunts and uncles and my mom. My uncle's a professional jazz saxophone player in Toronto. And my mom was singing to me, and we'd make music as a family, you know, sitting around campfires and that kind of stuff. So music was always part of my blood. When I was in university, I kind of put myself through school the first time, because I've done multiple rounds of education. I put myself through school primarily playing in wedding and corporate bands, that kind of thing. And then when I decided, I was like, okay, I'm going to be a professional musician. I went back to school and went to Berkeley, did that whole thing. And that was really cool. And it opened a lot of doors for me. And unfortunately, in 2005, 2006, had a pretty major car accident, and that prevented me from pursuing professional playing anymore. Like I had been on the road and been doing some gigs and session work and all sorts of stuff. And that put a sudden stop to that, because I had a major injury that I had to recover and do physio rehab from. And once I was kind of back on my feet and doing that sort of thing, and not able to play yet, but I was, you know, up and about and trying to figure out what to do with my life. I moved to Japan, and I lived there for a number of years, moved back in 2010 while I was there, finished rehab, started playing again, started playing out and doing session work, and started really my film and television composing career. Cause I was like, okay, well, I'm not, good enough to be like pro level out and touring and like really, you know, killing it. But I can play in a studio and I can write music and that kind of stuff. So I got into composing music for film and TV. Primarily, I do what I call melodic rock for media. And usually what it is either replacement tracks or what is like interstitial or background music. So like a lot of times, like if there's a, you know, two characters in a car and you hear the radio playing, usually it's not actually, you know, Led Zeppelin or Black Sabbath or, you know, Tower of Power. It's like some guy like me with a home studio that records, you know, 15 or 20 seconds of like a rock kind of track, and out it goes. So I've been doing that for a while, and moved back to Canada in 2010, and have been doing some more playing around and that kind of thing, and enjoying teaching all the way through. I mean, I don't know if you know any pro musicians, but most of us, if we're not touring or doing sessions, we usually are taking on students, you know, either privately one-on-one for like test prep or university exam kind of stuff, or even just, you know, kids or seniors or anybody that wants to get into, you know, guitar or sax or piano or whatever. And that was, you know, going all well. And then of course the event, shall we just call it that, happened in 2020 and, you know, all major film productions, film and TV productions shut down, all major tours or any sort of live music playing stopped. And I was kind of like, okay, well, what am I going to do? Right. Cause that's, you get paid residuals. So for the first 6 months, 8 months, 10 months, I was like, oh, I'm doing okay. If things pick up soon, you know, I'll have a little bit of a blip, but you know, obviously that wasn't the case. So you start looking and going, okay, well, what am I going to do, to keep going? And I'm like, okay, well, I can teach, I can do YouTube, I can do live streams, although I'm not really huge into that space. And I can write books. I'd always thought to myself, I would love to have my own sort of method book or method books, because I'm one of those guys that takes three pages here and two pages there and a chapter from this book and, you know, the back cover of that book. And, you know, I'd give my reading list to students' parents, and they'd look at me like I was crazy. They're like, Nick, this is $500 worth of books. I'm like, yeah, I know, they need everything. They're like, no, we're not buying that. And I'm like, oh, okay. So that's what I did in 2020, started writing my own guitar books, published the first one in, I guess it was August of 2021, and it hit the Amazon number one bestsellers list, which is really amazing. And then I did a follow up, right around Christmas, and that book's been out now for about a year, and it didn't hit the number one bestseller list, but it's doing well. It's chugging along. And that's kind of me in a nutshell. I know that was a bit of a long, diatribe, but.
Now, obviously you mentioned like your whole family was kind of a musical family. Do you think that kind of created, like, destined you to be in music? Or do you feel like you would have probably went into it even? Obviously, the variables are a lot different because it's a what if.
Yeah.
If no one, let's say, in your family was in music, would it be something that you would maybe picked up a love for otherwise?
I feel like probably I would have got here eventually. You know, probably would have had a midlife crisis at 40 and, you know, quit my job and sold everything and, you know, gone with a backpack and a guitar to, you know, Alabama or something and been like, all right, I'm going to be, I'm going to go live in the hills and play guitar with a jug band. But my brother's also a musician. He actually lives in Australia. He's a drummer and teacher and whatnot. So I think it's just in us. The path might not have been quite as clear had the rest of the family not been musical, but yeah, definitely would have got there anyway, I think.
Yeah, and I feel you mentioned a lot of people had to adapt in 2020, yeah. Especially, you know, people that music, you know, theater, yeah. Different, you know.
Yeah, music, theater. I've got a lot of friends here in Calgary that are in the live music production space. So like riggers, sound guys, stage hands, lighting folk, you know, like that kind of thing. And all of them suddenly went from, you know, making a living to destitute basically overnight. They're like, well, what do we do now? Because there is there's nothing, you know, if that's your main source of income is just live production, it's like, well, what do you do?
Yeah, and a lot of people shocking. Like adapted like you did in terms of writing. People were doing, yep. Kind of like everybody jumped on Zoom. I feel like Zoom stock like quadrupled.
Oh, yeah.
A yep. few months, but people were doing different, yeah. Like, you know, however they can be creative and whatever, yeah, they can do during that time. So I think it's,
yeah,
you know, just because you have something that may evolve into something else, like obviously, yeah. You're still playing and doing things of that, yeah. Nature, but also developing other sources, other revenue streams and other ways that,
yeah,
you,
totally. Know,
you can be creative regardless of what the economic, yep. climate is.
Well, and Zoom is so great too. Like whether you're doing like, I would always encourage people to like, if you're of the mindset to be able to handle it, but if you're a musician and you're looking to do lessons, don't do one-to-one because you're doing a straight trade for time. There's only so many hours a day and there's only so many lessons you can do back to back before you're completely burned out on that day. So what I've done and what I encourage others to do is actually do group lessons, right? Maybe 10, maybe cap it at 12, something like maybe even 15. The benefit to the student is that they actually end up paying less per lesson, usually half or less of what you would normally charge for a one-on-one. But for you, you're now making 10 times, 15 times that same revenue with that same hour that you've got in the day. So you can do a 4-hour block or say a 5-hour block and make what you would have made in a full week previous, which is phenomenal. And then of course I had the bright idea, kind of into 2021, partway through as well. I was like, okay, well, I'm doing the teaching thing and I got the books and I got my YouTube and everything else, but I'm like, okay, how can I get more reach out there? So I decided, as if I didn't have enough on my plate already, and I developed an actual app. So it's called the Guitar Dojo. It's on the Android store, the Guitar Dojo by Nick Morrison. And there is also an iOS version, but there's kind of a workaround. So you, if folks are interested, they can actually just check it out. It's guitardojo.ca is my website where they can go and get a free preview lesson of that. But now I don't even have to give lessons. They can just log on and take my, if somebody wants a lesson at 3 a.m., cool, away they go, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. You really kind of embrace technology. So like the opportunities, I think, are there. You just have to use what's, you know, kind of coming up and coming totally. Out, I usually say, like, or if I see something, I'll try trying to reverse engineer it and see how I can utilize it or help other people utilize it to, you know, help them in achieving whatever they're trying to achieve.
For sure.
Yeah, and it's funny because I actually, when I was younger, I played guitar, piano, and violin, and all of those things, my mom forced me to do so. So I feel like if I did it on my own and discovered it on my own, I would have stuck with it. But the fact that, like, she was pushing me to do so kind of pushed me away from it.
Oh, totally. Totally. I remember I actually started guitar isn't my first instrument. I actually started violin when I was like 3, I think, maybe 4. There's something called the Suzuki method, which is from Japan, and it's specifically geared towards children, and you use a tiny violin, and like my mom still has it. It's like yay big. And I think she was like really excited that I wanted to be a violinist. So she got me into lessons, and it was the same. It was like push, 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 push. And I think by the time I got to like 6 or 7, I couldn't take it anymore. I was just like, I hate this and I don't want to do it. And so she finally let me quit. And it's funny because I go back and listen to those rehearsal tapes, and I suppose a bit of it is ego, but like I listen to them, I'm like, I was actually pretty good. Like, not like, oh, that's cute, your kid's playing violin, but like I was, and I mean, obviously I was 7, but like I actually had some talent, obviously, you know, which translated to guitar. But I think it has to come from within. And that's one of the things too, I talk with students all the time. I'm like, before we even get going with lessons, is like, okay, is guitar really for you? Is that the thing? Like, why do you want to learn? What are you into it for? Is it playing with your friends? Is it, do you want to be a rock star? Do you want to write your own song? Because there's so many different levels, right? And if you're off the mark in terms of your teaching approach or your learning approach or your motivational approach, it's going to be a tough road, because guitar is not an easy instrument. Like a cat, for example, a cat could jump on a piano and it will sound pretty good. I mean, obviously, you know, the keys won't be right, but like a C sharp is always a C sharp on a piano, no matter what. If your finger pressure is off on the guitar, it's going to sound like poop. So physically, it's a very demanding instrument to play. So yeah, the motivation's got to be there.
Yeah, that I remember distinctly. I had an Eastern European piano teacher, so if I didn't practice my hands on the keyboard, she would smack the crap out of my hands.
Right, with like a ruler or something?
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, if it was a ruler or just her hand, but it was just like, you know, she's like, why didn't you practice? Why'd you waste my time and even coming here? Don't even come here if you don't practice. So yep. It was just like, I don't know. I feel like one time I didn't want to go so bad that I think I tried to like put nails in my mom's like car tire just so she would get flat, just so I didn't go, because it was just like such a horrific experience.
It was just
awful. And then, I mean, like you said, you have to have a passion for it and develop it yourself, because at that point, then, you know, my mom knew people, or like, you know, it came from Ukraine to the US. And when we first came, we went to the Eastern European church, everybody was Ukrainian. It was like comparing. So like, you know, so-and-so's kid played the piano. So, you know, why aren't you playing? They're playing and he sounds like, but it's like when you start comparing to like kids, to other people's kids.
Oh yeah.
It like throws them off and makes them like super standoffish.
Totally. Totally.
So what kind of motivates you to succeed today? I know obviously those motivations changed over time, but what currently motivates you to succeed?
I think, I mean, really more than anything else, it's just a sheer act of will, which sounds funny, but it's like, I have this inner urge to grow, get bigger, help more people, teach more lessons, do more cool stuff, break down boundaries, write new music, play in different bands. Like there's just every time I'm thinking about something to do, you know, like sort of business wise or music wise, I'm like, okay, well, what, there's just a need to create, I guess is if I had to put a pin in it, it's a need to create. So whether it's actually creating new music, which I do, or if it's creating an app or creating new connections, because that's really what I think all music aims to do, is to connect us, right? Because it's communication. So it's getting to know someone else's soul. I think there's no purer form of communication than being on a stage with 3 or 4 strangers and playing live music with them, because you instantly get to know who that person is and how they are. So, and I mean, to tie it back maybe more succinctly to your podcast is like, I think that's also the heart of business, right? Is connection with people. All business is people business. And if you don't get people, you don't get business. So I guess part of that, and I know I'm rambling now, but I'm like, part of that is the ever or the never ending quest to get better at connecting with people.
Yeah, I agree. And like you mentioned, like you always kind of want to like redefine yourself. I feel like I've said a lot of times, like complacency is the death of innovation. So, you know,
oh, totally.
If you get super complacent, like, you know, I've been doing this for 10 years, it's good enough, I'm going to keep doing it. Well, like, you know, it doesn't necessarily, you know, hold true. There's different technologies like we just spoke about. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in AI coming out that will replace large portions of workforces around the world in certain industries. So you can learn that and be the person that runs that to then, you know, not have your role basically, you know, kind of cut and no longer even a thing. So, I mean, the way you do things changes over time and you kind of have to streamline and adapt. And if you're like a creative and curious person, because like I said, I, you know, because of my mom and my parents pushing me into something that then I didn't want to do, you know, oftentimes I kind of regret because it is, I think it has helped me, like having a creative outlet like music or playing an instrument when you're younger, I think opens up different parts of your mind. So I feel like there's been studies. I mean, I can't like one-to-one, but I think I've read somewhere that like people that, you know, play instruments and are in music and stuff like that, they have higher like, you know, test scores in math and science and it opens up different things and helps with like processing concepts as well.
Totally. Well, yeah, if you're going through traditional, specific, I think it's maybe all musical traditions. I can only speak to the Western musical tradition because that's what I've gone through. I studied some, you know, Eastern music and African music and different traditions through my schooling. But, you know, specifically, I went through the modern Western modern because it was invented and like you're like codified in 1650 to 1700. Right. But if you go through that system, it's very logical. It's very math based. And it does the studies that you're talking about, and I can't rhyme them off the top of my head right now either, but they have shown that students that go through that process do score better on math tests. They score better in science. They score better in logic. And of course, creative thinking and problem solving, because those, the groundwork has been done by music. And, you know, the funny thing is that you don't even have to necessarily study music, but if you even just listen to music, pointedly and with purpose, especially with young people, if you expose them to, and I don't necessarily mean like the Mozart, because they did that study in the late 80s and early 90s called the Mozart effect, where they played Mozart for babies and then they tracked them over 10 or 15 years and they got higher scores, blah, blah, blah. But they've also done other studies that just show them if you play children complex music, i.e. jazz, more modern compositions, things like not just baby songs, that they actually do. They score better in math, science, reasoning, logic, puzzles, creative problem solving, all of that kind of stuff, because it really opens up the brain to larger possibilities.
Yeah, they, I mean, I don't know what study or whatever, but, you know, they say it's helpful, you know, when a woman's pregnant to kind of play music and stuff like that.
Totally, yeah.
For development. So what's one thing you can leave behind for the audience, personal, professional, in terms of advice, anyone looking to start, anything that you've experienced over time, anything that's helped you?
Yeah. I mean, I guess two things, right? One is just do it. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's business or you want to write a book or you want to do an app or you want to do a, I don't know, whatever, an internet marketing agency or an entrepreneur, any kind of entrepreneurial journey or a creative journey, it's all creative. It really is, right? Number one, but just do it, figure it out. Doing something and getting it wrong is actually a better indicator. If you get back up and keep going, is a better indicator of success than getting it right the first time. So don't have fear, just do it. You'll figure it out as you go. And I guess be willing to be okay with sucking for a period of time. That might be a period of weeks or months or years. But be okay with that. Just start. And then the other thing is, don't be afraid or don't listen to anybody else, especially if they are not where you want to be. And I guess the reason I say this is because there's a lot of people that will doubt you and will naysay and will, God, if you go on the internet and you look at some of the comments people have left me on my YouTube channel, I had somebody mid of last year literally tell me to go end myself. For what? This is a stranger on the internet that I've never met, and I'm putting out a free guitar lesson for them to you know, enjoy and up their guitar skills, and they leave me this vitriol. But the point, I guess, is I'm trying to make is just don't listen to any of that, because it doesn't matter. Just follow your heart, and if you keep going over time, over a long enough timeline, you will eventually succeed. The only surefire way to fail is to quit. Sure, you may have to pivot a couple times and change and learn your lessons and, you know, take your lumps, but you just keep going and eventually you'll get there.
Yeah. And I think starting's half the battle.
Oh, totally.
Because it's one of those things where, whatever you're doing in life, if you're trying to start something else, your mind and, like, as a human being, it wants comfort and safety. So when you throw something that may put you in a situation where it's out of your comfort zone.
Yep.
Or maybe, you know, jeopardize your livelihood. Let's say you're making, you know, I've talked to many people that were making 6-7 figures, and then they had a crazy idea, just, you know, leave everything and then.
Right. Start, give it all up and.
Yeah. Start this endeavor. So at that point in time, you know, your subconscious starts trying to kind of trick you and convince you that this is the wrong thing. But everything I've done in life where it was like a scary decision that I try to talk myself out of, when I actually did that decision, it actually turned out to be worthwhile and was never a mistake. Totally. And like you said about failing, I think it's important to fail, because if you succeed on the first try, you know, applauds to you, but like,
great.
It's like, you know, fool's gold, kind of like, you don't know what happened to replicate it when you go through
correct
a process of, you know, XYZ failed, I pivoted in this direction, I did this differently, you know, I did that or the other, and then you develop a process or something that actually, you know, became something, you understand like what has happened. I mean I'm 38, from 18 to now, you know, if you ask me, you know, how to solve a problem in 18 and now, if you ask me how to solve it, I can give you a lot better framework based on the mistakes that I've made. And we learn in the mistakes, and they say, you know, a lot of analogies, like, you know, a sailor doesn't become a seasoned sailor in, like, you know, a safe harbor. So you need those trials, and you need those things to really kind of test you, because oftentimes in life, you know, you never know what's going to happen tomorrow. You may have to encounter something a lot tougher, a bigger problem, that those things that you've overcome as building blocks will help you with that moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that note, because you were mentioning about mistakes and so forth, I think one of the things that people get afraid of, so it's afraid of making mistakes, but it's also fear of failure, I think, is the bigger one. And then, of course, there's a bunch of offshoots of that, right? It's like, okay, so it's lack of respect for my friend group or family, loss of income or loss of money, loss of respect of my spouse, inability to protect my family or feed my family, like these things. So all of these, and I mean, they're not insignificant issues. Right? They're definitely things that play on people's psyche. But what ends up happening sometimes is with the goal in mind of, I need to succeed as fast as possible, folks will, and I've made this mistake too. So I'm not coming from a place of like, do as I say, not as I do, or I guess maybe I am. but I've made the mistake. So the point is don't necessarily go and find a guru that's going to quote unquote, teach you how to jump over things. Because chances are they don't know anything more than you do. And you're going to spend a bunch of money and not be any better for it. Realize that it's usually best not to listen to those people. Just, you know, plow your own row, figure it out as you go. And it may take a while, but that's okay. Learn those mistakes, because they're going to be your mistakes and you're going to be much stronger for it at the end.
Yeah. And a lot of those are situational. So if somebody says, you know, I'm the expert in X, Y, Z, or podcasting, or, you know, I have this award. Well, I mean, those variables aren't going to align, you know, certain things that, like, nothing is mapped out 100%. That person may have met the right person at the right time. You may be even more skilled at whatever you're doing than that person, but that person just, like I said, everything aligned at the right time.
Circumstances.
Yeah. They took advantage of it and they kind of ran with it. So.
Yeah. Let's not forget about luck, right? If you want to call it luck or the alignment of stars or correct circumstances or whatever, and whether it's a creative thing, because we see that a lot in the arts, right? I've actually got students that are brilliant, brilliant guitar players, and they're coming to me for performance advice and small little technique things and whatever. But, you know, one of the common denominators amongst some of these folks is, why aren't I able to be famous, quote unquote, let's just call it that, when XYZ player or XYZ band is making millions of dollars and they're not half as good, quote unquote, subjectively, as I am? And it's like, sometimes it's just luck.
Yep.
And that's just the way it is.
Yeah. And it's compared, like, it's important to kind of, I guess, have a goal and be driven, yeah, where it's like you're comparing, but in a positive way. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, you know, my skill set is better, like so on and so forth, but it's better based on, you know, it's actually like better if you can prove that. Because a lot of the time, when you're in that situation, the example you use, it's emotion driven. So, you know, totally, as soon as, you know, you identify that that person got a break and you didn't, it's more like it goes into a part of negativity that's not really helping you. And
yeah,
it's just like wishful thinking and, you know, scorning that other person or other group that doesn't help you.
I mean,
the saying, I guess, comparison's the thief of joy to a certain extent is true. Like, you staying in your own lane and you like honing your craft, doing all the right things, putting yourself out there, but still understanding and kind of who's around you, what they've done, and just being positive and thankful, I guess, along the way goes a long way as well.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I've got a lot of peers. We tend to agree. Many of us agree. The ones that I kind of hang out with and speak with most, like, and I'm going to come from a music standpoint, but music is not a competition. The only person that you have to be better than is yourself yesterday. Right. So as long as you're putting one foot in front of the other, you're putting in that work and you're getting 1% or 2% better every day, or even 0.5% better every day, you're winning. Right. And you can kind of look at business the same way, right? Or entrepreneurship, although obviously there's KPIs, there's more metrics, there's dollars. So it is quantifiable. You can say, oh, well, such and such business is better than mine, blah, blah, blah. But there's a Simon Sinek book. I'm sure you've read it. It's called The Infinite Game, where if you think about, instead of a finite game of I have to get to the end and win with the most points, i.e. dollars, if you take that out of the equation and change the equation, never mind taking it out, but changing the equation to this game goes infinitely, the only way to win is to continue playing, then it becomes much more about that competition with yourself and getting better and better every day. And that will then help you staying the course to keep at it for the long term so that you can reach that success eventually. Because again, long enough timeline, there is no way that you can't succeed with whatever it is, guitar, business, riding a bike, building cabinetry, learning to sew, whatever, right?
Yeah, it's talking yourself out of it, I think, because in 2023, you know, attention span is so short, especially through social media and like instant gratification and dopamine hits and anything you try. It's like, all right, I have this great idea. Okay, I did it for a month. It didn't work. And it's like, why didn't it work? I needed that kind of instant gratification. And if it didn't work, let me move on to the next thing. Well, maybe you didn't even learn anything from it because you didn't do it long enough. You didn't see if it could succeed because you didn't let it mature.
Absolutely. On that note, I mean, I've been at my guitar YouTube channel since 2011. Just this year, I breached 3,000 subscribers and I finally reached monetization and I'm still going strong. So now I've sort of finally, I've sucked for a long time, basically, is what I'm saying, you know, but you keep at it because it's like, I know eventually it's going to click and it's going to work. And I know a lot of folks that just, I don't mean to sound like I'm tooting my own horn, but I know a lot of folks that have started and stopped in that same amount of time. And, you know, we've had conversations similar to like, why haven't you quit yet? And I'm like, because I know it will eventually pay off. I'm eventually going to get there. And slowly but surely, it keeps happening. So I'll keep at it.
and regardless of how you look at it, I mean, if it's benefiting you, if it's showcasing your craft or you're learning something from it, it's truly like, you know, and it's rewarding. You're
totally,
you know, you're getting something out of it because a lot of people do a lot of things and then, you know, I'm not getting out of it or they do it for the wrong reasons or they're pushed to do things and then they don't enjoy it. I mean, stuff like podcasting. I think during COVID there was like podcasts double because people were at home and like, yeah, let's have I have time to start. So then Joe Rogan got his 9-figure deal with Spotify, and then that actually opened up the doors, like, you know, I'm going to start and I have something great to say and I'm going to get picked up or acquired by Spotify or just monetized. And that's not the thing. Like, it's very, if you're an indie podcaster, majority of the time, what you have to go on is the love of actually, you know, communicating or getting your content to the masses, because it takes a while to, unless you kind of hit or you have, you know, backing, like a marketing budget right off the bat or a partnership or a studio studio behind you.
It ties to some famous names or some such.
Yeah. Right? And even that doesn't really transition to podcast success, because now a lot of people are going to, you know, musicians, actors, actresses, and giving them a show or an opportunity to have a show. Right. And that doesn't necessarily equate to, you know, success in the audio space. Yeah. They may be carrying over, because that's the hope, you know, if they have communities of tens of millions of people, you know, let them carry them over as listeners and then monetize that way.
Yeah. But,
you know, if you're not doing things for the right reasons or things that you're getting out of it, you know, it has to be more than, I guess, just the paycheck at the end of the day. I mean, if you do something long enough and you don't love it, you're going to hate it, and it's just going to be, you know, miserable. It's going to affect your life, your health, and everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you probably know the numbers better than I do, but I think I remember reading somewhere it was like 85 or 87% of new podcasts don't even make it to like 30 episodes or maybe 50 episodes, something like that. But like basically they start for a few months and then quit, right?
Yeah, because majority don't make it past episode 9, actually.
Oh, there you go.
So it's basically that pod fade. I know plenty of people that have bought thousands of dollars of, you know, different microphones, boards, and things of that nature. And and then just some of them recorded a few episodes, but some just, you know, this is too much work. Because I mean, everything in life worthwhile is work, you know.
Everything is work, absolutely.
This is going to be, you know, a 30-40 minute conversation, but it's going to take, you know, 5 or 6 hours, you know, all in to edit, to, you know, cut up the video, put the audio up, create the website page, promote it, and so on and so forth. So it's like one of those things where it's like an iceberg effect where, you know, that iceberg you see isn't going to sink the ship. It's that massive thing, you know, behind the scenes that really does it.
Yeah, totally.
So
how long have you been running your podcast now? I know you've got a couple hundred episodes, right?
Yeah, five years now this last month. And I co-hosted another show with two co-hosts like a year ago or so that lasted for like 15 episodes because, I mean, dynamics wise, with if you're working with people that have different, you know,
it happens.
Yeah. So 5 years. But I think if I started when I wanted to start, it would probably be a few years prior to that.
Cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's one of those things where it was like, you know, I wanted to do it and then I got things out of it because originally I have a background in digital marketing. Then I saw how I can market clients and companies through the, you know, audio medium. So then I, you know, was doing media buys with shows like TED Talks and, you know, incorporating and getting buy-in from companies to start their own podcasts, like even B2B podcasts that are used as, you know, lead generation tools or tools to show and differentiate who you are and who your people are. Because oftentimes, you know, B2B companies are like, you know, all you know is like this software world. There's 10 other things that do the same thing. What differentiates you from them?
So. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so it's been a journey. You know, it's more of a passion project and I enjoy my format because I get to talk to people. So, I mean, it started as a solo show. And if I kept it as a solo show, it would have ended because, you know, there's only so many things I think you can
there's say. Only so many things you can say, right? To your four walls.
Yep, I agree. So I really appreciate you stopping by today. Can you let the audience know how they can find you or anything else you have going on?
Yeah, totally. I'm on pretty much all social media platforms with the handle Samurai Fingers. So it's like youtube.com/samurai fingers, Twitter at samurai fingers, TikTok at samurai fingers, et cetera, et cetera. My website is guitardojo.ca, and that's where you can go to find all things me and guitar instruction. You can find my app. You can find my books. I'm also on Amazon. If you just look up Nick Morrison guitar, you'll find my books there. I am planning to publish another book this year. I'm just kind of deciding. I've got two very highly competitive ideas right now, and I'm trying to weigh out which one I'm actually going to go with. So there will be a new book sometime this year. And then of course my app, the Guitar Dojo, available on Android for direct download, or iOS through my website. So
awesome. Thanks again for stopping by.
Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
This podcast has been brought to you by Nova Zora Digital. Find out how Nova Zora Digital can help your company grow online. Learn more at NovaZoraDigital.com. Until next time, all you digital savages.